It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark the Junior. In this hour, adventure on the high seas. In a while, we'll hear The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen from 1948, but right now it's The Diary of Captain Scott on Suspense, a tale of explorers making their way to the South Pole. With Jay Novello, Richard Peel, Ben Wright, and Helen Morgan, the CBS broadcast heard on February 28, 1956.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you the true story of five polar explorers and their race against death. We call it The Diary of Captain Scott. So now, starring Ben Wright, here is tonight's suspense play, The Diary of Captain Scott.
Wednesday, January the 18th, 1912. Camp 69. Temperature minus 22 degrees. AM, the South Pole. We have arrived, yes, but under very different circumstances from those expected. We have had a horrible day. Elation ran high all morning since we were nearing our goal and thought to be the first five men to reach the pole. But our hopes were dashed when Evans sighted a flag and a tent near the spot. The Norwegians have forestalled us in our thirst to get here. In the empty tent, under the name of their leader, Roald Amundsen, were listed the five men who are with him. It's a terrible disappointment, and I'm very sorry for my loyal companions.
There's no doubt of it now. They did find an easier way up over the barrier.
We thought as much back at Cape Armitage.
Sure, it's a rotten shame, men, and I'm sorry.
Good Lord, Captain Scott, you've done everything you could.
Well, there's more to do. More for all of us. 800 miles, as a matter of fact. Are you ready to start back, Evans?
No, I can't think of a reason to stay in this miserable place.
Is the sledge ready, Oakes?
It's a bit frozen in, I suppose.
Yes, I meant. Wilson, do you vote to start?
Oh, the faster the better, Captain.
Well, Bowers, can you get a sight and start us off on course?
Well, the sky's a bit overcast, but I think so.
Yes, I think I can.
We'll go, then, as quickly as we can. A minute saved here will mean a minute more of comfort aboard the ship. January the 18th. Temperature minus 20. P.M. The moment of departure is here. It is impossible to collect our thoughts, since few of them are voiced. But I know that the same are with all of us. Can we pull the heavy sledge that great distance? 800 miles over trackless, windswept barrier and drift. Can we find the carefully arranged supply camps we left on our trail? Can we trust our navigation instruments? Can we survive? January the 20th, night camp. Temperature minus 25.6. Came along well this afternoon for 3 hours, then a rather dreary finish for the last hour and a half. Weather very curious. Snow clouds looking very dense and spoiling the light pass overhead from the south, dropping very minute crystals which absolutely spoil the surface. We had extremely heavy dragging and were forced to stop when Wilson suddenly discovered that Evans' nose was frostbitten. There's no doubt that Evans is a good deal run down. His face and hand are badly blistered. Oakes, too. Now Bowers comes into the tent to report his last sighting.
I can't get an accurate one with this sky. I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
What do you think it means? The weather's breaking up?
I don't know, Oates. How accurate was your sight, Bowers?
I can't be sure. I should say that if we aren't on our line of march, that we're very close.
A few points could be quite important.
I know, but our next camp is no more than 7 miles.
So that simply means that we're 7 miles off schedule. I'd plan to be there tonight.
I can go on, Captain. I feel better now.
No, Evans, no. We'll stay the night and get up early in the morning. But we must have fewer delays. January the 21st. Temperature, minus 30.4. This morning, while Freeing the sledge from ice, Evans slashed his hand. I'm afraid the poor chap is in for trouble. As wounds will not close in this cold, and we absolutely cannot spare the time to camp, as our rations are very low, as well as our fuel. January 28th, night camp. Temperature minus 27. The miles continue to fall behind us, but with painful slowness. Our diet and with it our general condition has improved since finding our half-degree supply camp. Only 42 miles to the next one. But we are not without ailments. Oates is suffering from a very cold foot. Evans' hands and face are in a horrible state, and tonight Wilson is suffering tortures from snow blindness. Bowers and I are the only ones without troubles at present.
I've got your ass.
Don't try to help, Evans. Just hold to the sledge.
I wasn't helping, Captain. But I've got to rest anyway. I get dizzy.
Don't sit down, Evans. Stay up on your feet. Can't we put him in the sleeping bag? Put him on the sledge?
No, I won't do that.
We can pull him.
I won't do it.
If it's for the good of the rest of us, Evans,
no. I'll stay here first.
Then if it's an order.
No, not that kind of an order. I won't be dragged on by the rest of you.
Then you've got to come along.
7 or 8 more miles, Evans.
And then we'll be stopping for some rest. And a hot meal.
I'm not thinking of those miles. How many more 7 miles are there?
Let's cover these.
How many more?
Evans!
I'll do the best I can.
I'm sure of it, Evans. And everything will be all right.
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, there'll be hot food in a few more hours. Let's move on.
February the 11th. Temperature minus 26.2. The worst day we have had during the trip, and greatly owing to our own fault. We started on a wretched surface pulling on ski. The light was horrible. Dulled by fog, it made everything look fantastic. As we went on, the light grew worse, and we found ourselves in pressure. Then came the fatal decision to steer east. The disturbance grew worse, and my spirits received a very rude shock. The farther we plunged ahead, the less possible it seemed that we could find a way out. We struggled until 9 p.m. and could do nothing more but make camp. There is no getting away from the fact that we are not pulling strong. Your eyes, Wilson, how are they?
Better?
I think.
Let me see. Yes, I think they are. Oh, Evans. Evans!
Yes?
What do you say?
Was I saying something? I didn't think I was. I thought I was asleep.
And perhaps you were.
Know what you were saying, Evans? You were naming the schools that donated sledges for the expedition. Oh, I thought I was asleep. I must have been dreaming about home. I like it better there than I do here. I mean, I like dreaming about it. I like it asleep.
You'll get as much rest as you can, Evans. We'll want an early start. You heard, how's your foot?
It's better, Captain. Bothers a bit in the morning, but then it gets better.
Good.
How do you make it so well, Captain?
Why, because I know that everything is going to be all right.
Just cheering us up, do you really think so?
Oh, of course I think so. You know as well as I what splendid planning we've had. Everything's going precisely as it should, with a line of supply camps right back to the ship. All we've got to do is to follow it. February the 17th. A very terrible day, although we got out of the turmoil. Evans looked a little better after a good sleep and declared that he was all right. He started in his place on the traces, but half an hour later, he had to leave the sledge and follow behind. At the first rest stop, he came up very slowly. He stayed with us for a while and then dropped out again. We tried to pull him onto the sledge, but hadn't the strength. And so he had to walk again and again fell behind. At lunch camp, we saw him coming far astern. And when we looked again, he had fallen. Heavens! Heavens!
Is he alive?
Wait. Yes! Get him up on us! Get him moving! Come on! Heavens! Heavens!
Let me go.
Walk! Walk, man! Walk, Evans!
I don't want to.
Lauren! Catch the others, Bowers, and bring the sledge.
Right.
Evans,
will you listen to me? You can't lie there. You've got to move. Evans, come on. Get up. You have to do it.
I can't live.
Over there, my tree. No, thank you.
Then we got him into the tent. He was quite comatose. And he died quietly at 12:30 p.m. It is a terrible thing to lose a companion that way. His passing is a frightfully personal thing to each of us. As is usual, our doubts and fears are not voiced. But I don't think that one of us does not wonder how many of the remaining four can survive. February the 22nd, night camp. Temperature -22.9. There is little doubt that we're in for a rotten, critical time going home. And the lateness of the season may make it really serious. We never won a march of 8.5 miles with greater difficulty than we did today. We have come now a bit more than half the distance, which leaves almost 400 distressing miles of dragging still before us. On the bright side, we found another supply camp and have 10 full days of provisions and have less than 70 miles to the next camp. March the 1st, lunch. Very cold last night, minimum -41.5. But our fortunes have changed. At least the future looks brighter. Bauer's excellent navigating has kept us precisely on course, and on it we found an unexpected supply tent containing rations and a note addressed to me. The men at the Cape had taken it upon themselves to change plans, for which we are very happy. The next camp, we expected only supplies, has been enlarged and manned. We are to be met there with dog sledges. At that point, our dragging days are finished, and only 24.5 miles away. March the 2nd, night camp. All the elation of yesterday has been crushed. This fortune rarely comes singly. This day we have suffered 3 distinct blows. First, through some oversight, our fuel oil supply is less than half of what we thought it was. Second, Titus Oates disclosed his feet. They show very bad indeed. They'll never be saved. Lastly, the weather has turned on us. Blizzard conditions are extreme. We are in a very tight place indeed. But none of us is despondent. Or at least none shows it. March the 10th. Things steadily going downhill. Midday. -43. Blizzard still with us. Oates unable to go on, so I camped at noon. I've covered only 11 miles in the 8 days past.
Captain?
Yes, sir.
It's quite difficult to say this, sir, without sounding heroic. I'm going to die, and I know it.
No, you aren't, Oates, and you mustn't talk like that.
Captain,
No, I am, and I'm not afraid.
Just stop that, Oates.
I know what I'm saying, sir. The quicker it happens, the better. I'm not going to hold you, the rest of you back. I know I felt about poor Evans. He was holding us back, and I knew he was going to die. I was angry with him for keeping on as long as he did.
Oates!
What kind of talk is that, Oates?
It's the truth, and I don't care. When he was holding us back, I knew there was no chance for him. I wanted him to die. I don't know what the rest of you are thinking, but that's what I was. Now I'm holding you back, and I won't have it. I want you to leave me.
We'll not leave you, Oates.
No, please, Captain, I'm not afraid. I'd really like to go, sir. I'm tired, and it hurts, sir. I'd like to go to sleep and not wake up. I've no family to leave like the rest of you here.
We won't leave you, Oates. You know that.
But please, Captain. What if I did get through? There isn't a chance. What if I did? I'd have my feet cut off. I'd rather die than have it done. Please, Captain, I'm not thinking of anybody but myself. I want it that way. I'll get into my sleeping bag and I'll go to sleep. I'm not afraid. I want to.
We can't do that, Oates, even if we agreed with you. We couldn't leave you.
Please, Captain. You know I'm right, sir. All of you know. Please, Captain. Please, sir.
March 16th or 17th. I've lost track of dates, but I think the last is correct. Poor Titus Oates is gone. Should this journal be found, I want these facts recorded. This was his end. He woke in the morning yesterday. It was blowing a blizzard. He said,
I'm just going outside. Shan't be long.
He went out into the blizzard. And we have not seen him since. March 18, night camp. We're still about 40 miles away from the sledge camp, but ill fortune presses. My right foot has gone. 2 days ago, I was proud possessor of the best feet. Now one is gone. But my companions are still confident of getting through. I don't know. We have the last fill of oil in our primus. This alone between us and thirst. March the 21st. Got within 11 miles of Dog Sledge Camp yesterday, but blizzard forced us to lie up. We cannot move against it. We do not dare to leave the tent. They would surely die if we did. If conditions...
Bye.
Over here. Oh, I didn't see her.
It's so nice in the sun, I thought I'd sit out for a bit.
Yes, it is nice.
Nothing like this at your precious South Pole.
Well, nothing like this, no. Down there, even when the sun is high, it's always weak and diffused, you know. And because of the reflection from the ice from every side, there never is a definite shadow. It's always a number of shadows on any man or subject.
I would say that your South Pole would drive anyone to insanity.
Well, I think it has. And then, when it's low, the sun, there's the never-ending twilight that holds today and yesterday together for months instead of moments. I remember when we reached the pole, the endless white deserts undulating but offering nothing to stop the frigid winds that sweep endlessly on.
I think you love it.
No, I hate it. Because 5 men marched to the pole and they say they've conquered it. But they haven't. It will conquer them.
You'll never go back, will you?
No.
I didn't want you to go, remember? I was afraid that you wouldn't come back. Do you remember when I said that?
Oh, yes, I remember. I laughed at you, didn't I?
I was such a coward.
But I laughed and told you that I'd conquer it just for you. That I'd name a glacier for you.
And I ask you how a woman should act when a glacier is named after her.
Well, I didn't name a glacier for you, but I thought of you, Kate. I thought and dreamed of you so often. It's a
important that you know that.
Scott!
Kate, I love you. And at this sacrifice...
Scott!
What? Oh, yes. Bowers.
Wilson. Dead.
Oh.
Wilson? Oh. Wilson is dead.
March the 29th. Since the 21st, Bowers and I, surviving Wilson, have had a continuous gale and blizzard from west-southwest and southwest. We had fuel to make 2 cups of tea apiece and bare food for 2 days. On the 20th, every day we've been ready to start for the dog sledge camp 11 miles away. But outside the door of the tent, it remains a scene of whirling drift. I do not think we can hope for any better things now. We shall stick it out to the end, but we are getting weaker, of course. And the end cannot be far. It seems a pity, but I do not think that I can write much more. This rough journal and our dead bodies must tell the story. Dying. We are... Following year, an expedition formed by Captain Scott's comrades at the main depot at Cape Armitage set out and found his body, along with that of Bowers and Wilson. Search was carried on for Oates and Evans, but they were never found. A great cairn was built at the site of Scott's final camp, a trivial monument to the courage of 5 men, and especially to the complete devotion to duty of Robert Falcon Scott, who, until his dying breath, continued to keep a record of the fatal journey. Ben Wright starred in tonight's presentation of The Diary of Captain Scott.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from February 28, 1956 on CBS. The story was previously used on the series in April of 1952 with Herbert Marshall in the lead. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVigneur, choosing shows for this hour that bring us to the sea, and we'll continue to be there in our theater of the mind next with The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen. This Mutual Broadcasting System episode from February 4th, 1948 features the voices of Barry Kroger, Edwin Max, Rolf Sedan, and former producer-director of Suspense, Elliot Lewis, at the helm in more ways than one, in the story The Peg-Leg Skipper and the Iberian Blade.
Entry, The Catch Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, Master. Position, 8 degrees, 4 minutes south, 112 degrees, 20 minutes east. Wind fresh, sky fair. Remarks, cleared Surabaya, Java after losing valuable cargo. Reason for loss, the peg-leg skipper and the Iberian Blade. followed some dirty weather into the harbor of Surabaya. But as soon as we tied up to the Semarang Trading Company's docks, the skies cleared. Then the port's business renewed. Harbor craft skittered to and fro. Profit in Dutch florins passed from hand to hand under the heat from the Java sun. And a visitor rushed aboard the Scarlet Queen.
You are Captain Carney, yeah?
That's right.
I am Carl, the bishop from the Semarang Company.
Oh, you got cargo for us?
Yeah. Cargo for you to take to Darwin, Australia. We will load at once, yeah? When the papers are in order and the officer, you come up there to sign. You first get ready to take it aboard.
Yeah, what's the rush?
Yeah. Rush. Silicon for the steel mills in Australia. I pay you bonus if you rush, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Gallagher! Peel the covers off the hatches. We got cargo coming aboard.
Done, skipper. Nielsen, take two men and open number one hold. Cola, give me a hand on number two. Let's go!
The papers were in order, and even before I'd come back to the ship, the cargo was streaming aboard. As per the bills of lading, the boxes that were dropping into the holds were marked Silicon, the Semarang Trading Company, Darwin.
Hey, what is this stuff, skipper?
Silicon?
Yeah.
That's a hardening chemical used in making steel, Red. How are we doing?
Just about all stone.
Good, we can use that bonus. I'm going below and get our clearance papers ready. And just about then, we had our second visitor. I heard him before I saw him. And then he was entering my cabin. He was a seafaring man from his looks. In place of his left leg was a wooden peg. He was past middle age, bloated. He looked at me through pig eyes that were forced almost closed by a frown.
I'll have a word with you, Captain Carney, about this cargo.
Wait a minute. Who said you could come busting in here?
You'll sit down, Carney. My name is Tom Larkin, captain of the schooner Sea Sprite.
Can't figure what you and I have got to talk about.
This cargo.
It'll be loaded before dark, and I'll be casting off at dawn.
The cargo, Captain Carney, is rightfully mine.
Now, wait a minute.
Never mind an argument, Carney. You see, I've learned that arguments are won by the man holding the gun.
And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week, a complete entry in the log. And every week, a league further in the voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
No arguments, Carney. The cargo is mine.
That isn't what the papers say. They're signed by Carl, the bishop, and me, and they say the cargo is consigned to me. What do you get off pushing in here with a pistol in your fist saying it's yours?
I have a contract with the Semarang Company. I've sailed under their flag for 25 years. It's my cargo. I was delayed by heavy weather in the Straits. Instead of waiting for me, that the bishop gave it to you. You'll be paid a bonus for your trouble and the affair will be settled with new signatures.
If it's as simple as that, what's the gun for?
I've been dealing with men for a good many years, Carney. Like I say, I learned that more arguments are won by the man holding the gun. I lost a leg as well as an argument one time when I didn't have a gun. It was a strong lesson.
All right, how does this argument wind up?
You'll come with me up to the bishop's office where the contracts will be re-signed and the cargo will be transferred to my ship.
Yeah? Well, we'll see about that. It was just about dusk when we reached the company warehouse. Went through the door into the bishop's office. The bishop was through signing or unsigning contracts. The cause of death was unexplained yet, but he was slouched over his desk in an attitude that was unmistakable.
Here, what is this? Beggs, what's happened?
A slight man with hunched shoulders and balding head stood in the middle of the room wringing his
hands. Tell me, Beggs, what happened? You're asking me, what's the matter with the bishop?
I don't know, sir. I was locked up when I came in. I don't know.
Don't gibber, Beggs.
I don't know, sir. I was locked up. I tell you when
quiet,
I came,
please.
Sir. I really...
Stop
it!
The bishop? The bishop, what's the...
Blast you.
He lifted the body to an upright position.
Blast you for a worthless cat!
And he shoved it. The chair upset and the body crumpled to the floor with it. lock and stood looking down at it. So did I, looking at the ornate Spanish silver hilt of the Iberian blade. It was protruding from just above the bishop's heart.
I'll see to the transfer of that cargo, Connie.
What makes you think I'll stand by anything you see to?
I've got the authority now that the bishop is dead, and I use it.
Look, Larkin, I got a contract with the Semarang Company. They're going to release me from it, or nobody is. That's law in Java, or the Malay States, or Australia, or anyplace else.
I'll take care of that.
Not with me, you won't. Get in touch with the Darwin office. Tell him to notify the port captain here. I'll take my orders from him.
I'll take care of that, Captain Carney.
You, Beggs, come here.
Hello, sir.
What's your tie-up with this?
What with?
With the office, the company.
I'm a clerk,
What
sir.
Was the murder for?
I don't know, sir. He was about that just sitting there when I came.
What about that cargo? Why's Larkin so hot to get it aboard his ship?
I don't know, sir. I don't know nothing about Captain Larkin's interest
Stop
in this.
Stop sniveling. You better report this murder. Somebody ought to be interested in poor the bishop. Gallagher?
Yes, Skipper, in the cabin.
Where in blazes you been? Doping off?
Took a little time off and got mixed up in a murder.
Now, well, put the bottle down. You don't need a drink.
That's where you're wrong. I'm not kidding, Red.
Well, who was it?
The bishop.
The devil? How come?
I think we took on a hot cargo. I tried to get hold of somebody at the customs office to check it for us, but it's after hours. I think to play it safe, we better get the queen out of here.
Why? Who are we running from?
A Captain Tom Larkin, who's got a peg leg or crew someplace and strong feelings about putting this stuff aboard his ship. I don't want a dozen or so armed men catching us off guard. I want you to move the queen.
Where are you going?
I'll be in town at the Simpang Hotel. Get her out of sight. Anchor in the stream someplace. And break open a few of those boxes and see what the cargo really is. Let me know sometime tonight, will you?
Yeah, sure.
I sent a cable to the Semarang Company's office in Darwin explaining things and requesting an answer addressed to me at the Simpang Hotel. Then I checked the local law to see if the bishop's murder had been reported. It hadn't been, so I gave them as much of the story as I knew. Then I went to the hotel to wait. I waited about an hour and a half. Yeah?
Captain Carney, I must talk to you.
The figure on the other side of the door was very trim, darkly appealing, and very feminine. She pushed her way into the room and closed the door.
I am Marcia Calero.
How do you do?
I was for a long time a very close friend to Carl.
Carl?
Carl de Bishop. We met in Argentina and I followed him here.
Mm-hmm. Sit down, Miss Calero.
Thank you. It is so sad about Carl.
Yeah. Why'd you come to me?
I had no place else to turn. It was such a shock to be told by the police like that. So sudden. They told me about you and I needed someone to talk with.
In the States, we'd say your act is from hunger, Gordon.
I beg your pardon?
You got my address because you or Beggs or Larkin found out about my cable to Darwin. That's the only place I mentioned this hotel. Suppose we dry up and start again, huh?
Yes, always. Captain Carney, where is your ship?
That's better. My ship is in a safe anchorage, and it'll stay there until I hear from the Darwin office or turn it over to customs or both.
Oh, that is good. I was afraid that Captain Larkin had gained control of it.
Why?
It was Carl's cargo and mine. Now that Carl is gone, it is all mine. We made the original investment, and now I deserve to make the profit. Is that not right?
You aren't wasting many tears over your late, very close friend, but it sounds businesslike, huh?
I am not so hard as I sound. I am very frightened. Captain Larkin wants to steal the cargo. That is why he killed Carl.
Hmm? What is the cargo?
Why, it is silicon. You must have known that, Captain Carney.
That's what I was led to believe, yeah.
I want you to help. I want you to protect my cargo and have the police arrest Captain Larkin for killing poor Carl. I would pay you a big bonus. You would do this for me?
Everybody's got a bonus. Look, why don't you just tell the police about Larkin?
I'm afraid.
If you're telling the truth, why should you be?
I am telling the truth. But sometimes the truth is very hard to tell.
About the cargo, you mean?
About everything. You see, I am not Carl's legal widow or the remaining legal business partner. Who is that?
Hey, Skipper.
Oh, Red, just a second. Come on in.
I'm on... Well, I should say so.
This is Miss Marcia Calero.
How are you?
Mr. Gallagher.
How do you do?
It is my pleasure.
No, not at all.
What did you find out about the cargo, Red, if I may interrupt?
Cargo. Oh, yeah, Skipper. I split open some of those boxes. It's silicon inside, all right. In bars about a foot and a half long and about 6 by 6 inches the other way.
Capitan, you did not believe me.
I do now, gorgeous. I do now.
Oh, Skipper, here's something I picked up at the desk for you. It's a cable, I guess. Clerk said that it was...
Yeah, thanks, Red. Hold it.
Huh? Well,
listen.
Is Captain Larkin?
Get out of sight, gorgeous. In there. Hurry. We'll take care of this guy. All right, take the side of the door, Red.
Yeah.
I'll open it. You collar him.
Yeah, okay.
Who is it?
You'll open the door, Connie.
Oh, yeah. For you, I will, Larkin.
All right, I'm just getting inside.
Hey, what's the crew for, Larkin?
Hey, what is this anyway?
Get inside!
Hey,
get out! Get out! Look out!
Enough water for the good captain. Don't want to drown him, Clyde. He's coming round now. Keep him in the chair. Two of you behind him. Get his arms. Now we'll have a word, Connie.
Where are we?
Never you mind that, sir.
What do you want?
You'll tell me where your ship is. That's what I want from you.
I don't know.
Oh! You'll be stupid if you want to, Carney. But look round you. The sight may change your mind.
I looked at the strange room for the first time. Gallagher was on the floor out. The little bald clerk, Beggs, slumped forward against the line that lashed him to a chair. He was bare to the waist, and his torso was striped by welts from the beating. Lashed into another chair sat Marcia Calero, her eyes filled with terror.
You understand now, Carney. There'll be no stopping until we learn what we want to know. Where is your ship?
What happens to my mate and me if I tell you?
No, don't tell
me.
I said, what happens if I tell you?
I'll have that cargo.
And what'll we have? My mate and I.
You'll not go together to show me where your ship is.
It's all right. My mate stays here. I'll take you. Then what do we get?
No, you can't.
Once the cargo's aboard the Sea Sprite, and we're well out of the harbor, you'll be put over the side, and I'll be through with you.
I'm supposed to believe that, huh?
All I want is the cargo, Connie. You and your mate can go hang after that. Well?
All right. I gambled because there wasn't anything else to do. I went with Larkin. I marked the spot we left, a residence somewhere near the local river, the Calimas. Then we headed toward the waterfront. I led him down onto the mud shore. I was hoping for a small boat, any small boat that would look like it had come from an American ship in these waters. I kept moving forward as though I knew where I was going. And a few hundred yards down... Here's the boat.
All right. Get in, sir. Now, start rowing. And remember, Captain Carney, I'm the man who's holding the gun. Here.
I rowed us well offshore. I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I knew it had to do it. And it had to be simple. I figured I'd roll over the side, then get under the boat and capsize it. I waited. And then... I heard his shots just as I settled into the water. I went under the boat, reached up for the port gunnel and pulled down.
But I saw!
Threw him off balance, and before he could regain it, I hit the starboard gunnel and pulled that down. Careening back to the other side, he tumbled out of the boat. I heard him come to the surface. He was working well. I got his gun went. But I'd made a mistake. I underestimated him.
Come ahead, Carney. I'm waiting for you.
I'm coming, Captain. I approached him head on and started to circle. I was barely able to see him in the dark. When I circled to close in, he moved toward me. He flipped over on his back and lunged out at me with his big leg. Caught me in the solar plexus, knocked the wind out of me, doubled me over. He climbed onto my shoulders and pushed me under. Then the pig kept jabbing down at me. I felt it sear along my face as it took a gouge of skin and flesh from my cheek. And with almost my last bit of consciousness, I grabbed out for it. I held on to it. I fought my way to the surface. I kept my grip on it. Using it as a lever, I held his head underwater. His right boot thrashed into my face, my chest, and my belly. But I held on until the kicks got weaker and stopped. And I had to fight with myself to keep from passing out. He was only half alive when I pulled him onto the mud shore. His gun was still held tightly in his hand. I took it away from him. We rested for a while. He was able to talk by the time I got him into the bishop's office in the Semarang warehouse. Now, like you say, Larkin, we'll have a word, huh? Sit down.
You're a sly one, Carney. But you'll pay for this?
I hope so. What makes that cargo worth all this?
I don't know.
Maybe I can beat you into knowing.
No, you can't. Because I'm not lying. I don't know. It's worth a fortune, but I don't know why.
How do you know it is?
Beggs told me he heard the bishop talking to the woman about it.
Didn't you lash the rest of it out of Beggs?
No.
And you didn't get it out of the bishop before that knife blade went home?
I don't know anything about that. Ask Beggs. He was here.
I think I might do that. Right after I settle you in that chair so you'll wait for the police. He wasn't comfortable, but he was secure by the time I finished lashing him into place. Then I took Larkin's revolver, dried it, reassembled it, and shoved it into my pocket. As I did, I felt the crumpled, water-soaked cable from Darwin that Red had brought me. It was the first chance I'd had to read it. I stopped once before I got back to the residence on the Kalimas River to pick up a likely-looking stick of wood I saw lying by the side of the road. And when I walked down the hall to the room where I'd left Red and the others, I used the stick. With it, I sounded enough like Larkin to fool myself. I hoped my voice would sound enough like him to fool his crewmen.
You're open the door, man. I'm alone.
Hold it, all of you. Stay where you are.
Larkin!
I said hold it! Drop your guns. Get your hands on your head. Keep them there. Turn around. Get up against the wall.
Captain, how wonderful you are back.
Glad you like it, gorgeous.
Oh, I do. You will free me now.
In a minute, Marcia, since I get my mate on his feet. Hey, Red. Gallagher. The devil are you doing? You all right?
No, I'm not all right. But I learned enough to play possum after they clubbed me the last few times I came to. Give me a lift up, will you?
Yeah, sure. Come on, mate. On your feet. There you are.
What happened to your face?
I got tangled up with that peg leg of Larkin.
Capitan, you will free me
don't
now.
Don't get anxious, Marcia. Beggs is in worse shape than you are. Here, hold the gun on your friends, Red. I'll cut him loose. Beggs? Come on, Beggs. We'll have you back on your...
What's the matter with him?
He wasn't built for a flogging like that.
Oh, he's dead? He's he's been sitting
Come
there.
Come on, Marcy, I'll cut you loose.
Gracias. I can go with you, Capitan. You will stay near me.
I'm not so sure you'll want to go with me.
Oh, but I do. You have to take me.
Okay, remember that you asked me. We're going to my ship to get a few bars of your silicon and then to the customs office. Red, take care of your friends, will you? I'll be back.
English.
No, American.
Yeah, what is you
We brought you some silicon. We'd like to have you look over. It's from a cargo that belongs to Miss Calero here.
It is also unnecessary, Capitan.
What is it you want, silicon?
I want you to take these bars someplace where you can melt them down.
Oh, Capitan, why you do this? You are so foolish.
Maybe gorgeous, but if silicon wasn't the cause of this mess tonight, something else was.
What is mess?
Two murders to date.
What is the silicon?
Ask her.
I ask you.
I do not know what this is all about.
No, I think I can come pretty close. A shipment of silicon to Australia is natural enough. It's used to harden iron and making steel. I don't know what its melting point is, but it's pretty high, over 1,000 degrees centigrade. So it would be a lot of trouble to melt down the bars to see if anything had been mixed with the silicon.
Yeah. You talk too quick. I don't follow so fast.
You don't have to understand. All you have to do is have it melted to prove whether I'm right or wrong.
I do not know anything you are talking about. I will be at my home if the customs officer wants to talk any more to me.
Hey, look.
Yeah?
Get this stuff someplace where you can melt it. I got another stop to make with her.
Yeah, if you think it is necessary.
It is, Chief. I got it on good authority. Hey, Marcia, wait a minute. Now, wait. I'll walk you home.
I do not think I would like
it. Oh, come on. Maybe on the way we can figure out how to pin the bishop's murder on Beggs. Come on.
You are a difficult man to understand, Captain Carney. Why did you say that?
Because you killed the bishop. So Captain Larkin wouldn't force him to transfer the cargo to his ship.
Why do you say that?
Because Captain Larkin saw you do it.
He is lying. You know he is.
No, I wish I did. I hate to see you go up for it. You aren't the type for Dutch prisons.
Captain, wait. Why did you say that?
Because you're so beautiful.
You think so?
I'm human. I'm not blind.
I do not understand you. Look at me.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want?
For what?
To go away or to stay with me? You know what it is about the cargo, no?
Sure. Diamonds.
They don't have to find them. Why don't you stay with me? We will have money and together a good life.
With eyes like yours, gorgeous, you'd make it tough.
Garrido, please.
But I saw that Spanish knife handle sticking out of the bishop's chest.
Oh, don't, please.
I'm afraid I wouldn't have one easy moment with you.
Oh, but you would, mi amor.
Because I couldn't forget how you handled very close friends when you're through with them.
I hate you. I'll kill you. Get away from me.
All right, calm down, Gorgeous.
Let me go. I'll kill you.
The hours between the time I dropped Marcia into the hands of the local homicide boys and our departure from Surabaya were busy ones. Customs took the rest of the silicon off the ship and melted it down. The diamonds hidden in it were worth enough to buy and sell the Queen three or four times. We took on a legitimate cargo the next morning, and by noon we'd cast off and nosed out into the wind sweeping down across the island of Majura. Ball the men into their positions.
Wind port, chief! Make sail!
And the halyards screamed through the sheaves under the pull of strong backs. The mainsail rose into place. The jib went out. And the mizzen. The deck beneath me canted the port. And the Scarlet Queen took the bone in her teeth and settled onto her course.
I guess we'll get there with this rig, skipper.
It'll do, Red. At least it's dropping Surabaya on our stern fast enough.
Yeah. You know, you're a pretty sharp lad, skipper.
Oh, thanks, Red. How do you mean?
Oh, the way you figured out that there were diamonds in that silicon. How'd you do that?
Oh, that was simple, Red. I might be just a little psychic.
Oh, you haven't got X-ray eyes. I know you well enough to assume that, I think.
I hope your opinion of me won't drop when I tell you, Red. That cable from Darwin gave me a hint.
A hint?
Yeah, it was from customs. They said they'd arrested all the Semarang Company personnel in Darwin and would appreciate any information I could give them on those in Surabaya. Hmm. They were suspected of smuggling diamonds.
Oh, a hint.
Why did all the rest, Red? Up to and including putting another beautiful woman behind bars.
Yeah, well, we'd all be better off if you'd stay away from them and stick to the one you got. Here, Skipper, to the Queen.
She's got a few tricks herself.
Yeah.
To the Scarlet Queen. After you, mate. After you.
Entry, the Ketch Scarlet Queen, 5:30 p.m., wind fresh, sky fair, sea cresting with high cross swell, ship secure for night, signed Philip Kearney, master.
Adventure with the Voyage of the Scarlet Queen on Tuned to Yesterday from February 4th, 1948 on Mutual Radio. And that brings to an end this hour of Adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.